Welcome to Writing in a Pandemic. In the next 25 minutes, we'll be hearing from two disabled writers talking about creativity and mental health during the dumpster fire that was 2020. You'll also hear a reading from one of the writers. Stay tuned. So a few weeks ago, I caught up with my friend, writer Gemma Mahadeo. Most of that conversation can't be shared on air, but we did discuss COVID welfare payments and the weird cessation of misplaced guilt that many feel in spending those payments and in just having enough money as a person with a disability and a writer with a disability.
It does so much for your mental health knowing that you don't have to constantly worry about, can I afford my meds? Can I afford rent? Can I afford the bills that are coming up? When you don't have to worry about those things consistently, it's kind of a bit like hypervigilance. You don't realize how hypervigilant you are until it's gone. And it's the same with meeting your financial costs. You don't realize how stressful it is or how much you worry about it until you're able to meet them easily. I hope that makes sense, or I hope that resonates with people.
Yeah.
Again, I didn't realize how stressed I was about money. It was more of a, look, stop being so ungrateful. At least you're getting something. And again, the government wants us to believe that. They want us to say, hey, look, you should be grateful that we're giving you something at all. And it is very much the mentality that you have to adopt in order to survive, just to survive. But then once that's not the case anymore and there's actually a bit more wiggle room, it's sort of, you realize, gosh, that really stressed me out. And it wasn't a stress out whenever something was due. It was like this base level of stress, financial stress, that you would just have for months and months and months and months, or years even, and you wouldn't realize it dropped until the coronavirus supplements came in. Yeah, it's interesting how, the country is perfectly fine with you being a part of the, the job force, but then the moment that you're not able to work, they just completely forget that you exist. It just seems really unfair. And I'm glad I should say this. I was thinking, I have ranted about this before on Twitter. What part of the government, from a capitalistic perspective, how do they not understand that it's actually in their best interest to keep the population as healthy as possible? Because when the population is healthy, technically it means they are more productive. I know for myself, for instance, when my mental health is fantastic, I'm definitely a lot more productive, able to work on the commissions and projects that I get faster. Things feel a little more seamless. It doesn't feel like I have to really summon up that energy and then use up that energy and then be spent for the rest of the day and I can't do anything else but that one task. But it just makes so much more sense to want to keep the people that you govern over healthy, because if they're healthy and also physically and mentally healthy, and I don't mean in any way cured, inverted commas, I mean that the most physically and mentally healthy they can be, or that is possible and achievable for them individually, you're just so much more productive. It also means that if you feel that you can contribute to society, it makes you feel better about yourself, which then again also makes you happier, which means that you're able to stay healthier for longer and possibly in turn not have to rely, inverted commas, on welfare so much. People want to be independent. People don't want to be. There are a lot of people that do not like. I don't like being on welfare. That ideally, my dream life is to just be able to comfortably meet all my financial obligations, be able to afford my medications, be able to afford groceries and food for my cat, and that's pretty much it. Like I don't want to be rich. I don't want to be well, as in cured. I can't separate my illnesses from my being. To me, they are so tightly woven, and I don't mind them at all. I'm glad that they've made me a person that understands things that fully abled people might not necessarily understand, unfortunately, unless they have amazing capacities for empathy. But you know, those people are rare. They do exist, but they're rare.
On a brighter note, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about some of the commissions that you've had this year. So, exciting stuff that you worked on. Tell us about it.
Most recent one I finished was Liminal Magazine, who I absolutely adore. They commissioned me to write a piece for their electronic chapbook, which had the theme taste. And I think there's the kind of that trope of Asian Australians having to talk about food whenever, you know, you mention the word taste, and it instantly conjures up, I notions of food and how that's tied to culture. But I didn't want to write about that. I wanted to explore what taste is from a very basic level. And I wrote a piece based on the five senses, because it turns out that the historically taste has actually had a lot to do with feeling. I'm going from the Oxford English Dictionary, which has a massive entry charting the development of the word taste as a verb and a noun. And I wrote a bit about that, and also wanted to interrogate what taste means. So when we talk about, for instance, good taste in, say, music or art, what constitutes good taste and what constitutes bad taste? So basically, I was very pro. You better have a damn good reason for saying that someone's got bad taste in something, because that's what right do you have to judge? So I got to talk about some of that stuff. And then my favorite bit for that was probably a sound essay. So it was a rewriting of, or a homage to, the song Park Life by Blur. Written from the perspective of a depressive, but the words to the, I guess my rewriting of the song, they're all linked to different musical tracks. And so it was sort of an exercise in taste, because I linked to a lot of covers of songs. So, you know, songs that were quite famous, but then people have done really cool, odd covers, and sometimes I've also preferred the covers over the originals, which I know is pretty controversial. And I also put in a lot of different classical music recordings of the same piece, because I mean, that's another thing, that classical music world is a bit elitist, but I also wanted, hopefully, I wanted my reader to think of classical music performances are basically covers. They're constantly covering. They're performances of the same piece, and doing recordings of the same piece, or having different recordings of the same piece by composers, essentially a cover. It's just like a really, really long one. So yeah, that was heaps of fun. And the commission that I'm working on at the moment is a game called Invisible Illness. It's in Twine. Twine is a non-linear narrative storytelling device, which is online for free. It's it does require computer access and online access. And basically just set it up as a game where the person is chronically depressed and has to negotiate and make choices as to how they're going to get through their day. Will they end up hospitalized, or will they end up coasting, or will they end up staying well? Or yeah, it's sort of, there's a few, yeah, those are the three narratives. And there's also a bit of info dump so that people, I've written it specifically so that I've only mentioned the mental health issues that I've dealt with, because I don't feel that it would, for instance, I can speak for anyone that has mental health issues where there are psychotic features, so schizoaffective or schizophrenic disorders or psychosis in general. That's not something that I have a lived experience of, so that's the only reason I've left out information about that in the game. So hopefully the game is targeted towards someone who considers themselves completely, fully, physically and mentally abled. And it's, I don't know, I'm hoping that maybe that sort of person, if they do end up playing the game, will gain a bit of insight into what it is that people with mental health issues go through every day, and that going for a walk is not going to help, because you still have to have a certain amount of wellness to go for a walk. And also the suggestion to try yoga, again, you have to have a certain amount of wellness and energy and nutrition in order to do yoga, as well as also have appropriate clothing. I often learn the wrong way that after going to a yoga class, after many years of not having been, I'm wearing clothing that's completely inappropriate, such as baggy t-shirts, which you end up having to tuck in, but then that makes you extra sweaty and stuff. That, oh, yoga's expensive. So those are some of the things that I've worked on this year. Before the Liminal Commission, me and a colleague called Ian McClarty, who is an independent games designer, we worked on a game called If We Were Allowed to Visit, and it won the Experimental Game Award for the Free Play Independent Games Festival, which was really, really exciting. I just got my award in the mail this week. Never gotten a trophy or an award for anything, so that was super, super exciting. And that was actually cited as something that people were really enjoying playing during lockdown. People find, like, I don't know, for some reason they were really connecting to it during lockdown, which was really lovely to hear. It got a lot of fantastic feedback, and people are still talking about it, and it's been wonderful. Obviously, I didn't do anywhere near as much work as Ian, because Ian is the one that had to do all the 3D modeling, and all I had to do was write poems about objects. And it was so much fun. And we're still, it's also structured in a way that it can still be a work in progress. So I do still send him poems to add to the game. And I want to mention that it was really wonderful working with Ian, because from the outset, we started this about 2 years ago, I said to him that my health issues meant that I would not be able to work quickly, and that this it would be slow, but I would definitely send things when I was able. And Ian was like 100% understanding about that from the get-go. And I think that's an instance of where if I didn't work with someone like him, I might have not have produced as many poems for the game as I did. So because I'd go through periods where I wasn't thinking about the game at all, I'd have these ideas come up out of nowhere and go, I have to write a poem for that game right now. Oh, yes. And then, ideas would come at times when I would least expect it because I was relaxed and wasn't under pressure and knew that I had time. It was sort of, for us, it was just a serious passion project. But yeah, it's been sort of there've been exhibitors that have curated it in some of their online games exhibitions. I think there was one in Portland, and it's also going to be featured in a Berlin-based online exhibition. So yeah, there's been some work that I've produced this year that I've really enjoyed working on, and have also been lucky enough to have people for who I work with that weren't just saying that they were understanding about my health issues, but genuinely were understanding about them, which meant that I could give them work that I felt I was proud of rather than rushing to make a deadline, which was really. Yeah, I can't, I don't know. I just can't stop being grateful. It just feels really, really wonderful to have those opportunities because I know how rare that can be to have people like that in your corner. So that's definitely been one of the lights keeping me alive, psychically in 2020.
That's the perfect way to end. Thank you so much. You've been
That's all
grateful for
right.
minutes. I love the that's fantastic. You've worked on some incredible things this year. I mean, I knew about the
Yeah.
game, but it's like the twine thing, and that's incredible. Do you want to tell people how they can access the game?
It's not available just yet, so it will become very available very soon. I'll be posting that on my various social media networks, and I'm more than happy to pass on details to you as well. Because I think it goes up in early December.
Okay, well, we can link it.
Yeah. But the so if you Google if we were allowed to visit, it only works in desktop browsers. It doesn't work on mobiles. I'm really sorry about that. That's an accessibility issue that I didn't think of. You can access that game. And for Liminal Magazine, I think it should be pretty easy to find that there's the e-chap book Taste. And the name of my piece is What is Taste? So, yeah, there's five parts to it. With different, so there's a poem, there's a sound essay, there's like a little bit of memoir, and yeah, just different sections devoted to the five senses. And yeah, you can read about those on Liminal Magazine. Thank you so much, Leah and Sher, for being so good to work with. By the way, they're top people. Yay, Liminal.
That was Jemima Hadeo. Next up, we have a reading from Ana Maria Gomides. Could you tell us about the piece that you're going to read today?
So I'm going to read just a couple of excerpts from a story called Eat Me, which was originally written for performance for a Jed Press showcase called Cry Havoc, which was a part of the Melbourne Writers' Festival last year. And it's eerily prophetic because it's actually about surviving a zombie apocalypse a little longer than most people, not despite, but because of being chronically ill. And so I am very much convinced that I'm a witch now more than ever. And this is really exciting as well, because this piece will also be a part of a very special to be announced multi-art form series by Art Success Victoria called the Other Film Festival, which is launching in mid-December. And the content warning is that it does have mentions of suicidal ideations, but nothing in detail.
Beautiful. And you can start whenever you want.
I guess what's really kept me alive this long is my agoraphobia, a condition, some say, that stops me from living life to the fullest, whatever that means. The depressive episode leading up to my latest summer holiday meant that my support network had dropped off care packages, groceries, meals, ciggies. My housemates never came home either, so I had plenty of supplies to keep me going. I could have stuck around for longer, but even though I had a shit ton of pills for everything else, I only had 4 days worth of my daily psych meds. My bedroom, kitchen, and bathroom are all at the back of the house, hidden from view by the fence I always thought was unnecessarily tall. The thing blocked out all the sun, and a brown bitch needs her vitamin D, am I right? I haven't really heard them out there, though. Maybe they hit up the neighborhood when I was sleeping. Maybe my neighbors are laying low, too. All my blinds and curtains were already closed to keep the heat in overnight, and once I found out what was going on, I had no desire to look. There's this joke among people of color that whites are always running towards danger. Bungee jumping, paragliding, skydiving, swimming with sharks. A wild animal on a track. Hey, buddy, come here. A commotion on the street involving the police. Let's all gather around and take a look. Just white people doing their thing. My mind raised me better than that. I've been ready for the world to end since my first ideation at around age 8. Simon and I concluded. If I die and cease to exist, then so does the world for me. But the world outside of myself is actually ending now. It's never really made much sense for me, the world. But everything got worse a few years ago, especially for us folks of color. History is always repeating itself when it comes to us. Trump being elected with promises of getting rid of migrants, specifically brown migrants. A known fascist in Brazil erasing the rights of pessoas indigenous within hours of being sworn in. Anti-Islam campaigns increasing in popularity. Self-proclaimed Nazis holding public demonstrations. Refugees in cages. Aboriginal children still getting stolen from their families. Black and brown folks being killed in the streets. A thing I used to tell myself when I was particularly suicidal was, I refuse to be just another black or brown death. Zombies don't seem to discriminate, though. In those videos of the protest, cops, civilian speakers, everyone was attacked regardless of their race. Color blindness might actually be a real thing for them. That's it.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for sharing your witchcraft.
You're welcome.
Yeah, writing a piece and then realizing how much the creative process and the intuitive faculties are intertwined.
Yeah,
you end up writing these things that become prescient.
Yeah,
it's, I love that magic. You've been listening to Writing in a Pandemic. We've only just begun this day of programming for International Day of People with Disability. If you want to know what's coming up next, visit 3cr.org.au/disability day 2020 for full details. Also note that all audio will be available on the 3CR website after the broadcast. Written transcripts will also be available. 15 shows coming up.
Eyes are tired, looking for a sign of anything that might give relief. Fantasizing all the things in my mind, will I feel more me? Punctual, waiting for a thrill to wake me from this deep dark sleep. Blaming myself for making plans that fell into the cracks I call mine.